You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Alexis Forte. Alexis is a wonderful costume designer. She and I have known each other for about 5 years. We met when my husband Frankie and her boyfriend Raul were cast in the TV show Looking Together. She has an energy for life that's contagious, and it was so great to spend some quality time with her for this episode. I loved hearing about why she's made the career decisions she has and the differences between working in theater, film, and television as a designer. So thank you, Alexis. I hope you all enjoy the 123rd episode of The Compass. So what do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
I've listened to your podcast, and so I've been thinking of what my answer is, and I don't know.
And what does the dark side, what does that mean to you, like, when you say that most often?
I think, for me, the dark side is, and for a lot of artists, it's like you've worked so hard to get where you are, and then you get it, and you don't have a life, and for my work, I travel a lot, so I think my dark side is when I'm in a hotel room by myself and I spend 14 hours at work and then I get home and I'm exhausted and sleep and wake up and do it all over again, and it feels robotic. Mm-hmm. And to not be in that mind space, I just have to remember that this is what I want to do, that there is no plan B, and that I am so lucky and so blessed that I get to do it, that I get to work on movies that I feel passionate about, or a TV show that I still get to do, a theater project a year, and like, so fucking lucky. And so I think I just have to remember this is what I want to do, but it's easy to, I think, just seclusion in general. And when you're at work, always like living in this alternate reality, and in storytelling, you're always thinking about these other people and these fictional characters. Mm-hmm. And it's important to take time for yourself. So like I try to work out every day, or like go to yoga or something, and it's not even particularly that I like working out. It's just what I do to try to carve out some time that's me time to stay happy and positive.
Yeah, and to really be present with yourself and your actual physical body.
Yeah, and I also like listening to podcasts a lot, like in the morning while I get ready, or like while I'm out like doing errands and like shopping for work or stuff. And I'm really into political podcasts now, because mm-hmm. I feel like another way of staying out of the dark side is just to remember how dark the world is. We're like, oh, you got it pretty easy, Alexis.
What are some of your favorites?
I like all the Crooked Media stuff, so like Pod Save America and Love It or Leave It. I like The Daily. So then I feel like I'm really up to date if I don't have time to read the news, that I'm still getting it and getting information that I think, I mean, it's all really liberal information, but I think that it's based on facts. Yeah. And then alternatively, I listen to that, and I listen to murder podcasts a lot.
A lot of people are into those. I have not really broken into them.
It's,
what do you find so fascinating about them?
I have a fear of getting murdered.
Don't we all?
Even like when I'm on my own, because I'm on my own a lot.
I see.
Like in hotel rooms and stuff. I'm like, I panic places. That like people can just get into your hotel room. Like anyone that works there has a key to it. So I'll always put put like a chair against the door or something that will make noise. I'm also a really heavy sleeper, so I'm like, someone could just come in and rape me and murder me. Anyway, so listening to the murder podcast makes me feel like I would have like
you're preparing yourself.
Yeah,
to deal with when that I get murdered. Oh my god.
I listened to one called My Favorite Murder.
Yeah, that's the one that I've heard a couple episodes of.
Yeah, and I like the ladies, and it's under comedy.
Right, it's lighthearted, even though the subject matter is so dark.
Yeah, and it's two women that like talking about true crime.
Have you heard of You Must Remember This?
I have. I'm wondering if I've listened to an episode or
not. I think it's actually like a movie history type podcast. I think that's actually their focus, but they have a whole series. I only listened to this series because I kept hearing people recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
They have a whole series of episodes on the Manson murders.
Really?
Which I didn't know anything about really, besides just like generally that something had happened. And it was fascinating and creepy.
So creepy.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little bit how I feel our government's operating now in like this cult-like mentality and what you can get people to believe and what you can people to do for you.
Yeah.
It's insanity.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show how easily we're all brainwashed. And then how we glorify someone like that. Not that like we glorify Manson, but like that people are so intrigued by someone who can manipulate us that we then perpetually talk about them.
Like
forever.
Give them free
and
publicity.
Yeah, and we give them that power. And that's how I feel about Trump.
Full circle on the podcast conversation. So you've been working in TV and film for a long time now.
Yeah.
And talking about the isolation and like the long hours and everything, is that, did you realize that that was how it was going to be when you were getting into it? Because, I mean, theater is intense like that,
right.
But in a different way.
I thought it was just going to be like theater. I wanted, in college, I studied costume and set design, and I studied in London, and in England, it's one designer that does both. And so I thought that that's what I was going to do.
Oh, that does set and costume.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so that was my plan when I was in college. And then I graduated, and I was like, oh, I've always wanted to live 2 years in New York. So it's turned into a lot more than 2 years, but because I always thought I would go back. But so I moved to New York and I started at the Public Theater, and I ended up going into costumes because I felt like I was stronger in costumes. That's what I wanted to do if I had to pick one. And I was just really broke, like really, really broke. Mm-hmm. Like, working in theater is, I mean, it's just unrealistic. It's, they don't pay us enough.
Well,
and they should.
Especially, it's scary to say that about, like, the Public is one of the largest off-Broadway theaters.
Yeah.
They're like their own
city. They are. And they're, and they are great, and I had such a great time there.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't, was interning and then with a designer there for Shakespeare in the Park. I remember in the summer.
Which show were you working on?
On Measure for Measure.
Oh, okay.
And before that, I had done another show there at the Public as well, working for working for Susan Hilferty, who's the costume designer there, that did Wicked and Spring Awakening. And so I was working there for her, and then they put me on to the next one, which was Measure for Measure. And then I was running a show at night, so I was working for that designer during the day and then running a show there at night to make money. And then they offered me such great opportunities, but it was just I was working so many hours and I could barely pay rent, and it was such a stress. So then I was researching. I was like, well, maybe I had some friends that were working in TV, and I was like, well, maybe if I can just get a PA job in the costume department for TV, I can see how that is. And before that, I had no desire to do TV or film. I always thought that theater was the end all be all of everything I was going to do.
Yeah.
And so I thought the way to get a job in TV was to research what a costume designers designed the shows that shot in New York, and then just email them.
I mean, it's somewhere to start.
I didn't hear back from anyone. Except for Ingrid, who's a costume designer on Nurse Jackie. And she was very nice and said, we'll absolutely keep you in mind if we have anything. And I was like, great.
That is so sweet, though, even to reply to a cold even, email
Oh, my God. She is the nicest woman.
That is very sweet.
So nice.
And doesn't that just, make it goes so far when you're trying to break in on something and nobody replies to an email? You just feel invisible.
Nobody replies to anything.
Yeah.
And so it was so nice that she did. And then I knew an actor on the show, my friend Arjun, and I mentioned that I'd written to her and that she'd replied. I was like, so who knows? Maybe I'll get a day. And he was like, why didn't you just ask me? I'll just put in a good word for you. And because I wanted to get it on my own. But then I realized that, and subsequently down the line, I realized that someone putting in a good word for you, as long as you can deliver on the goods, is still making it on your own. Mm-hmm. And but that it really helps to have someone who's already on the inside put in a good word. And it fucking sucks to say that, because you would hope that you can get there on your own. But I feel like so many times it's happened where you're qualified for the job, but you get it because someone's recommended you to get it.
Right. I mean, I understand how that can feel weird, but like you said, as long as you can back it up.
Exactly. So, yeah.
The person doesn't have to take their recommendation.
Exactly. No, they don't. So, yeah. But he did recommend me. And then she called me the next day and she was like, hey, we have some day playing. Do you want to come in? And so I worked a little bit on that, which was great.
What does that mean in costumes? If you're just there for a day, what do you help with?
So with PAs at that rate, you're helping with just doing returns and pickups. And so they had me on a few days a week, towards the end of the week between episodes. There's a lot of returns to do because they'll just get a new episode and then shop a bunch, and then they just need someone to help with returns. And so that's what I did.
Dealing with customer service people all day long.
You're standing in line at Burlington and you're like, I went to college for this. Okay. But yeah, we have to pay your dues.
It's to be done.
And everyone that there was so nice. And so I worked there for a bit, and then someone from there recommended me for this job on the Madonna tour that was prepping in New York. And that was really fun because that job became available because Josh Marsh, who you've interviewed before, left that to go to Girls. And then, anyway, so
he did not mention the Madonna tour when we talked.
He should have. I heard his interview. I really liked it.
Yeah, I just ran into him on the street the other day.
Oh, really? Yeah. He just got a job. I don't know if I could talk about it on here, but
we'll talk about it afterwards. Okay. I think he might have. I don't know if he mentioned something, but
just got it on Friday. It's going to be big and it's going to be exciting.
Okay, you can tell me.
but I'm very excited for him. And then from that, just led one thing from another. After Madonna, then Josh needed help on Girls, and so then I went to Girls, yeah. And then And then I worked up to being a coordinator and then an assistant costume designer. And hopefully one day I'll get to design for TV and film. But for now, I'm an assistant costume designer for TV and film, and I get to design for a theater, which I still try to do once a year.
As the assistant, are you getting to have a say in a lot of the creative decisions, or do you feel like you've had to gain a lot of those like managerial administration skills to do that part of the job?
Yeah, I think I just answer that question with a yes.
Yes to all.
Yes to all. I think that it depends the designer that you're working with. Mm-hmm. I have been assisting on a few movies now. Danny Glicker, who you know, and who I think is a genius and amazing. And I love working for him because I think he is very collaborative, and he likes hearing my thoughts and his design process. Like he's very vocal about like everything that he's thinking and researching. I feel like it's a great learning process for me to see how he works and discussing all the ideas with him. And I think that that's a really great creative opportunity that you don't get to do with other designers, because they don't want to know what your ideas are, which is also totally okay, because it depends on what everyone's process is.
Right.
But a lot of my job is to manage things and to make sure everything's on time and on track and to aid in whatever the designer's idea is and helping that come to life. So figuring out where we can get certain things or swatching fabrics for them based on their ideas and collaborating with the tailors and the supervisor and making sure that everyone's in communication. And so I think that's really important too. And I like assisting. I think that it's a great experience to have for when I do design myself.
Yeah. Well, especially movies are on such a large scale compared to most theater.
Yeah, and that's as someone who started. Yeah, as someone who started in theater, my goal is film, and I would like to design for film, and so I like being able to work on these movies with Danny, and I feel like I'm learning a lot from him. And so I don't know how many more years I'll be assisting, but I think that, I mean, I could assist forever and still keep learning all the time, you know? So maybe I'll design and assist, or I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see what the future has.
That's so exciting. What does your family make of your choice to be an artist for your career?
I'm sure everyone thinks this about their mom, but I have the best mom in the world. Because my mom has just been supportive of everything I wanted to do. When I was little, I was in swimming classes, so I was part of the swim team, and then I'm really into ballet, and so she researched like all these different summer programs that I would audition for, mm-hmm. and then I would go, and I was into art in school, so she got me like outside art classes too, and sculpture classes at the Miami Art Center in Miami. She's always like, whatever you like, let's research that and go full steam ahead and see if you like that. And so she's always been so supportive. And I went to a visual arts high school, and so art's just always been a part of my life. And I went in knowing that I wanted to be a costume designer. And so that's been my goal since I was like 14. And my mom's always been like, great, that sounds great.
Is there anyone else in your family who's kind of artistically inclined?
I have an aunt who is a dancer. And I think my mom's artistic in her way too. She's a personal trainer and a gym instructor, and she's recently started taking these painting classes.
Oh, cool.
Which is fun. And I really like her paintings. So, and my dad, I think my dad's artistic too. He did pottery in college. Like he didn't major in that, but he took a pottery class, and he likes like building little things. Like he's into these his mom's house in Portugal. He had these like vintage train set that he like recently put together, mm-hmm. and he put together this motorcycle that he bought in pieces, and he likes like putting things together.
Physical things. Yeah. Yeah. Are you an only child?
I am.
I don't know if I realized that.
I'm one of those weirdos.
The very, very social only
child. Yeah. I think that a lot of only children are like have to end up being social because we have no one else to talk to. So you talk to adults and then you just make friends with
everybody.
Everybody. I'm like, there is this, I grew up in Portugal till I was 10, and there is this woman who, there was a church at the end of our street, and the woman at the woman who cleaned the church, who I think lived there too, I would see her in the garden. Each time I would see her, I would run up to her and be like, "Mamãe," which means mom in Portuguese. But I called my mom mommy, so I heard other people calling older women mamãe, so I guess maybe in my mind I thought like that's what you call an yeah. older woman. I don't know. But
she's like, "Whoa."
But yeah, so all that to say that I feel like I've like made friends since I was little with like random people.
That's what, so I was homeschooled growing up, and uh-huh. I feel like it was something similar where like I was always very comfortable around adults.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't just spending time with people your age and your grade.
Yeah.
It's people of all ages.
Yeah. I think that there's benefits to being a kid who spends a lot of time around adults. I also think that it makes me, I think I'm not great with conflict sometimes mm. because I think when you're around adults, they just tell you what to do and you're not going to argue with that. And that I always wanted to be liked. So I'm not good with conflict.
That's interesting.
And I think I'm only recently starting to be aware of that, that like even in like my own relationship, I mean, every relationship has like, you know, not fights, but like,
right.
Like I think this, and then like I'll just like shut down. I'll be like, oh, yeah. And he's like, "What just happened?" And I'm like, "I don't know."
It's not accepting. I'd rather avoid the conflict at all costs.
I'm just gonna let's just move on.
Yeah, I totally understand.
But I think that that's only something I'm recently realizing is probably because I was an only child and I just wanted to be liked and accepted, and I didn't want to get in fights with people.
Since you have been doing so much work in TV and film, what has the transition been like when you've come back to design a play? Like, you just did Our Lady of 124th Street at Signature, which I loved.
Thanks.
But is it like a shock to your system to come back to that way of working, or?
A little, because part of the process of theater are the previews and the things like changing during the previews, and also just having to sit through it so many nights and with people in the audience. And I just, the first audience, like the first preview we had, I just looked at everything and I was like, "I fucking hate all of this." I was like, "What the fuck did I do? I hate it all." And then the next day, like, I felt better about it, and then we changed some of the costumes, but then it's just like this like anxiety of like you're still making changes, but people are watching it, and you keep watching it day after day. So I feel like I go through this like roller coaster of like, this is all great, yeah, I'm happy with this, and then the next day I'm like, "Oh my god, it looks horrible today." And everyone saw it. And I, like, yeah, so there's that. Like, I remember, like, that first week, Raul wasn't in town, but I would just, like, call him, and I was, like, crying, and he's like, "What? Yeah. What happened?" And I was like, it's ugly, it's all ugly, I don't know what I did.
No, we all deal with that kind of, like, second-guessing ourselves, yeah. or self-doubt. Are there any things that you've learned about the collaboration of the design team over the past couple of shows that you've done that's you feel like is making it easier for you to like speak up for your choices? Or I'm not sure exactly what I'm asking. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. I think that in theater, for sure. I think that the more, what's great about, that process in theater is that you get to try it that other person's way. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, and then this is my way. Can we just see my way again? And so you get to have that more than in TV and film, where sometimes you do have to, the other departments that you're collaborating with there are really like, what does the director want? And then what do the producers want? And in film, it's definitely more creative, and the designer has a lot more say, because it's something he or she is creating with the director. But in TV, you have all these, I just did a pilot with this great designer named Leah, who's also very collaborative, and I really like her. Mm-hmm. But we would have these fittings, and then the photos were sent out to and it's a network thing. It's it changes if it's not a network thing. It's definitely more creative, but a network, you email it to these aid producers, and then they email it to a whole other list of people that you will never meet, and that they have some say in it too. And it's
and then if they say no, it's quick turnaround, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's there was one character that we had to reshop for again, because they had new ideas and new stuff. But then other things, you'll have the fitting photos and they'll be all numbered, and someone will email back I like 4 and 8, and then someone else likes 3 and 6, and it's so everyone has a say. and I think it's important to work know how to navigate that, and this designer that I was working for is really great at that. She's a really good at never being confrontational with other people's ideas, and still working in that her idea is the one that wins. Mm-hmm. And I want to learn how to do that.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill.
Yeah.
So you don't get run over.
Yeah. Because I think at the end of the day, they hire a costume designer, and although people should have their say, I think that some network executive sitting behind a desk in LA, why is that blue shirt so important to you? And then it's they're not thinking about the larger picture of visually, what the uniform of the bar you're shooting in is, and what the love interest is wearing, and what this and that. And it's just it all has to kind of make sense visually together. And so it's a little bit frustrating when someone who's a million miles away and can't see that visual picture altogether has so much of a say. But
right.
It's a business, and we're all getting paid to be there. So yeah. I guess who's ever writing the checks gets to decide at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
We do not have to talk about this if you don't want to, mm-hmm. but I was curious how, since your boyfriend is also an artist, how you guys kind of deal with being in a relationship as two artists / all the long distance you have to do from both of your schedules.
I think I don't mind talking about it all, because I think that a lot of, I'm sure you two have to deal with this as well, that it's part of that first thing I said. It's just hard when you spend so much time on your own, and it's hard when you're in a relationship and you Skype every day, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that we're very lucky that we've made it work these 5 years, and hopefully 5 more years after that, and after that, and after mm-hmm. that. But it's hard, and I think that it's important to, we make time to see each other. I would say, if we're on a long-term project, that separated from each other, like, we'll at least see each other once every 3 weeks. And either I'll go to him or he'll come to me, and sometimes it's more, but it's around...
That's pretty good.
That, yeah. And I think it's really important to make the time to do that, even if it's, like, taking a flight, which I've done before, on a Saturday morning, and then taking the flight back on a Sunday night. Which sounds insane, but it's, like, is that more of a hassle, or is putting the time and commitment into your relationship more important? And for me, making your relationship work is more important, because at the end of the day, like, that's your life. That's who's there for you. So...
Yeah, that's the hard part when these jobs are so intense.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can't call you during the day because I don't even have 10 minutes to myself. And
yeah.
It feels like the most important thing.
Absolutely. And,
the, yeah. And then you have to remind yourself that no, it's not.
And I think that even at the end of a super long day, it's hard to, like, and get home and be like, okay, let's Skype now. Like, let's chat. And so... Because you're like, I've been talking all day. You're like, after work, I just want to sit in silence.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to decompress with somebody. And so, like, sometimes I'll get home, or he'll get home, and we'll just Skype from bed. We're just, like, chatting, or he'll have dinner, and I'll have dinner, and we'll just prop our phones or computers up in front. And so it'll be like we're having dinner together. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys ever gotten to work on a project together?
We did Looking Together. We did the Looking Movie.
I guess that's true. That's right. And that's... Because you started assisting Danny for the movie.
The movie before Gold, which was this movie that nobody saw, but you should, was the first movie I assisted Danny on. And then the Looking Movie happened right after. And so I got to go right on to Looking Movie.
That's right. Because I didn't really get to visit during the movie, so I forgot about that.
I felt so lucky to be there and to, like, get to be part of that final process for all of them. Mm-hmm. Since I think Looking was so special. And
there's Frankie was actually, to this reading he had to go to this afternoon, he wore the pants he wore to his wedding in the movie.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, I don't think I've ever seen those. And he was like, they're from the wedding in the movie. I haven't worn them since.
I love that.
They looked awesome.
I think that, like, there was an article recently, where was it, that was talking about, like, how if Looking came out now, it would probably have done better than when it came out. Which is crazy to think that, like...
It's only been a couple years.
Yeah. That a 5-year or a 6-year difference can really change the trajectory of a show. But it makes sense. I feel like we're living in a world right now where we want to escape so much from our reality that there are more... that there are shows on TV that represent more people. Because we want to escape into that. Be like, can we just all love each other? Yeah. And so maybe that's a good sign of also our current world status and administration, is that most of us don't want to live in this world, so it creates this great art for all of us to escape into. That'd be a bleak way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in right now.
Yeah.
Are there any lessons you've learned over the last couple years that you're really proud of that you want to share with me? It can be small things or big things.
I've learned that it's important to save money. As lame as that sounds.
That's always a great lesson to learn. How's that going?
It's, now that I'm between jobs, like, I'm so happy I've saved some money.
Because
I'm waiting for a job to start, and I don't want to take anything else until this job starts, because I want to do it. So that's good.
Very
and
important.
And I've learned, I feel like I've learned the practicalities of what I do more. Like, I went to an art school that just teaches you how to channel your design. and how to be a designer. And so I graduated without knowing how to budget for a show or to do a breakdown of the script or just all these little things that you're like, oh, I never learned that. I know how to model make and design, and we had technicians at school that would like help us with creating and constructing. But there was just so many practicalities that as you enter into the real world, you're like, I really wish they had taught me that. And so I think that that I wish that schools taught that more. And maybe other schools do, but mine didn't.
Yeah, it's hard to deal with that stuff when you're not actually working within the structure of a company that requires it.
Yeah, when like every project is just... In your greatest dreams, how would you design this?
Yeah. How long did you say that you lived in London when you were there?
I lived 4 years.
And that was college for you?
Yeah.
Okay. What was the name of the school you went to there?
It's called Central St. Martin's. Okay. And it's in our school, it's known for their fashion program. It's where Alexander McQueen went and John Galliano and Stella McCartney. And their designs, I think you can really see how like the school really nurtures design and learns how to, it teaches you how to put your ideas into motion and really be creative but it doesn't teach you how to make money.
No, I think that's a huge problem for so many people coming out of any type of art school.
Yeah, I think so.
It's like if things don't work out perfectly for you with like the ladder of the business, then what do you do?
I just watched the Alexander McQueen documentary.
How was it?
Oh, so amazing. So amazing. And I'm reading the book now too. I'm like almost done with the book, but I wanted to finish before the documentary, but I just couldn't wait. And it's interesting that he was creating all these fashion lines, like his collection, and putting on fashion shows, but was living on the dole, which is like unemployment. And he would use the money that he got from the dole and put it into the clothing that he was creating. And then like go to his parents' house to like get beans and toast. And he was like squatting in people's studios and he would get like spaces for shows for free and get people to work for him for free just because they thought he was so talented. And so it's interesting how you can go, and I think this goes across the board in our industry, how you can go from literally living on unemployment, and then at 27 he got offered the position as head of Givenchy, and so he went from the dole to being a millionaire overnight.
That's insane.
Insane. And I think that's which is why I think it's important to save, because I think that can like across the board in the arts in general, you can go from living off like scraps and then landing a big job where you're like, great, I'm set. That job's not going to last forever.
Right.
And so I think it's important for us all to keep true to your art and to do what you love. And when you have that good gig,
save your
save.
Well, that's what's so frustrating about it. It's like, you know, you don't know if or when that break's going to come. So how do you keep yourself creative? How do you keep your sense of self when you're not being rewarded in the way that you see people define as success?
Yeah.
Like how do you not let that impact your self-esteem? Like you're still an artist, you're still doing things, even if nobody's recognizing it.
Yeah, and I think that's the hardest part for artists in general, whatever their art form is. I think that, which is why I think it helps to live in a city like New York, or for those of us that went to art schools and like you went to Juilliard, to have that community that you can work with and you can still create, work with. And I think that that's so important. And it's hard though when you're still being creative, but your peers are on the cover of Vogue.
Right.
And to not compare yourself to that is hard. Because I think it's human to compare. And but it just makes you feel bad about yourself when really you should feel excited for your peers. I went to a school with this girl who's a production designer now. It's a woman. And she landed this. She went the route of designing indies. And I went like worked up from a PA up on bigger stuff. And then she got this job designing this really amazing show for this person that I wish I could have worked for. And when she told me, like, my heart just sank.
Yeah.
Because I was really so excited for her. And then this other part of me felt so jealous and sad for myself.
Right.
And dealing with that is hard, because I just had to remember that I was excited for her, and I should let that emotion reign stronger than my jealousy and self-pity.
Yeah.
And all I kept wondering was like, well, maybe if I had done that, maybe if I had done indies, maybe if like, then I could have that same thing. And
why not me?
Right. Me. And it's just, that's not helpful, and that isn't going to get you the job, and that's not going to make you a better artist. And it's just going to make you feel bad.
Yeah. And I think it's a natural thing to do, but I think it's still about, like, learning how to, like, shorten that time gap.
Exactly.
Between when you feel both and when you can just feel happy for them.
You can go home. You can let feel it go sorry sooner. For yourself.
Let it go sooner the next time, sooner the next time.
Exactly. And, and so hopefully each time you feel that way, it'll get shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's nice to propel each other up rather than push each other down. Especially for women, I think that we've all grown up in this world where people like the competition we create between each other and perpetuate this notion of catfights and bringing some girl down because she's a hoe or she's a slut or she's fat or she's tacky or she's whatever. We've come up with so many things to put other women down that... just based off our own jealousy. And so in work, when that jealousy creeps up, especially if it's against a woman, I just have to be like, it's okay to feel this way, but don't let it affect you or show, and get over it, deal with it, because hooray for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like usually that people perpetuating those storylines are just a distraction from all the jobs that the men are getting.
Exactly.
Because it's just perpetuating that myth that, like, there can only be one successful woman in any field. Or
absolutely.
There's only the one opportunity you can all share.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any particular types of stories that you're really excited about right now that you're really interested in telling?
I'm really interested in just period pieces in general. I think that I really like researching into a certain period. I like researching people, like real people. I like telling people stories that existed and just finding out more about someone who lived in this world and did it and survived this thing we call life. But no, I like sort of diving into different eras and seeing how what was going on politically or what was going on in that country or city or state or, you know, like what's going on in the world around them, how that affects what people wear and the actions they do and the stories that they tell. And so I'm interested in that. And I think that sometimes those stories aren't pretty and people don't do nice things. And I And so I think that's important to share. Like, the story doesn't need to be about good people or have a moral at the end, or I don't know if this is making sense, but just like
I mean, I think that's fascinating. Like, how does that affect what they were wearing? And I'm so curious what people will say looking back on, like, our time right now with all this crazy stuff that's happening in the world. And someone will look back and be like, during the Trump presidency,
yeah,
how did that affect what people were wearing? And it's, I can't, like, see it right now because we're in it.
I think that I see people wearing their thoughts on their sleeve, per se. Like, literally, like, there's this fad of, like, t-shirts that are just statements.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, and they're all just super simple, just a super simple t-shirt, a super simple baseball cap, like a whatever, that it's just a blank canvas of, this is how I feel, because we feel like we have to explain ourselves to people, or we want to make it clear to everyone what we're thinking. And maybe that's also a reflection of this Twitter age that we live in. We think that everyone should be aware of all our thoughts at all times.
Are you on Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter. I have
one for the podcast, but I basically just, like, announce the episode every week.
I think it's a great platform. I do. I don't think our president should be using it, but I think it's a great platform for other things. And I created one, but I haven't been on it in, like, 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
More into Instagram because I'm a visual person.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, so all in all, I'm into telling stories about people that existed. And so not all period projects are about real people in history, but that's, I think, what I'm most into is really looking to see what a certain person was like and trying to portray them in the most honest form.
If you are in, like, in the dark place or having a day where you're feeling really down or uninspired or like, why did I choose this profession?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any concrete things that you reach for? Like, besides, you mentioned working out, but like a book you reread or music you listen to or a concrete thing that you can turn to?
I think my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we talk every day, but I do call her more when I'm feeling down. So I feel bad about that. Sorry, Mom.
I'm sure she doesn't mind.
But I think that's my concrete thing.
It's talking to somebody who really knows you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think she's always on my side, but she's also good at showing the other side of the coin, that when you're on the dark side, you have no view of, because you've just clouded yourself into a fog of misery.
Yeah.
And so she's really good at being like, I see where you're coming from, but also something else to think about is...
You have all these things going for you.
Yeah. Or like, if you're mad at somebody, or you're bogged, or someone at work did something, like, she's good at showing their side of the story too.
Hmm.
Which I think is always helpful to have someone in your life that's like, I hear what you're saying, but maybe in your cloud, you have forgotten to listen. And it's good to have someone that just reminds you of that, because we all forget to listen sometimes.
Yeah. And then the last question is, have you seen anything recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
Yes. So the McQueen documentary, for sure. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing, amazing. I've been seeing a lot of movies recently. I saw Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Oh, I want to see
which
that.
Which is the new Gus Van Sant movie.
And Danny did that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Danny Glickard costume designed. And it was just John Callahan. It was this cartoonist. And he's an alcoholic who got into this horrible car crash and became a quadriplegic. And he became a cartoonist after that. And it's just interesting to see this person. In my life, I've experienced addicts, and they're frustrating, and it's interesting to see someone go through their dark side, like through the darkest thing that could happen to you, and come out on the other end. And just, they don't take you like through all the 12 steps of AA, but you see the people that he's met, and sort of how he comes to forgiving himself, and also that being an addict is an everyday struggle. Mm-hmm. That, and I think alcoholics especially don't, or even people that are addicted to drugs, like just addiction in general, people don't get, it's not treated like an illness, and they're made to feel bad about themselves, and like it's something that they brought upon themselves, and it's their choice. And each day that they don't partake is a struggle, and it is a conscious choice not to do it, but it has to, like, their instinct is to do it.
Yeah.
And so I like that, because I think it shows a lot of vulnerability, all the characters in that movie, and I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I was listening to Marc Maron had an interview.
Yes,
with the director. Yes,
I thought that was so good.
And Mark is sober, and he was saying that he thought it was a really, I don't remember the word he used, but like one of the most honest portrayals of like recovery that he's seen.
Yeah. Which I think
I'm curious to see it.
I think you'll really like it. My, he's never going to listen to this. It doesn't matter. This guy I dated in college, mm-hmm. He was addicted to coke, and I don't even know, like, he realized that he was addicted, and I don't know if he ever has, because I got to a certain point where I just said, where in the middle of the night, he came over. And he would do this. He would just like show up at like 3 or 4 a.m. and be like, let me in. And then like I would like nurse him back to health.
Yeah.
And he would just show up just because he knew that I would open the door. And he showed up, and it was my birthday. And he hadn't spoken to me that whole day, probably because he was like on some sort of whatevs. I can't believe I just said whatevs. But he was on, it's just a word you use when you don't want to talk about the real thing. And he showed up, and he was just, and this has happened multiple times, where he just needed someone to nurse him back to health when he was coming out of his down. I've never done coke, so I don't like the sound that your nose makes, the snorting sound. You can't do it. Insane to say that that's the reason I've never done coke.
It's as good as reason as any.
I've never done it, but it looks like it gives you a very high high and then a very, very low low. And mm-hmm. So I felt like at a certain point he was just coming to me for the lows, because mm-hmm. I think he's okay now, but I just feel like this movie really showed people that have addictions in a very real and vulnerable light that I think is important for us to see, especially since it's not treated like a mental illness. It's treated like, or not that it's a mental illness, because that mental illnesses aren't treated
either.
Right. Either. It's like, unless you have a broken leg, then you're fine. Right. Like unless someone has a sickness that you can see, then we don't validate it.
It's just treated as a bad choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so those are the two things that I've seen that I highly recommend.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was great.
This was. It wasn't as nerve-wracking as I thought.
Good. I'm glad. I'm not scary.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. You'll get access to bonus content, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brandon Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.